There's a couple of different things that we need to do. Number one, what we have to do is focus in on certainty across the United States of America. And what I mean by that, for example, in January, we have these looming tax hikes that are coming that are creating more uncertainty. And here's the bottom line is this, is the more certainty we create, the more people that we have that are creating jobs that pull money out of the sidelines, invest into their American companies, and put more people back to work, which, of course, what that does is that creates more taxes for the government, which allows us to get the budget under control. Another thing that we have to do, for example, in the I sit on the Ag Committee, is we go in and we try to address the abuse of the food stamp program. And just for one example is people that receive $1 of heating assistance, it automatically qualifies them to receive $200 on up in food stamp assistance. Well, what we want to do is we want to have folks come in, fill out an application and qualify so that we can capture the people that are abusing the system that might, you know, have $50,000, $100,000 in the bank. One lady that hit the lottery was still receiving them. So capture all of that abuse and waste that's out there, but at the same time, get our corporate tax rates. We've got to fix our corporate tax rates. We have the highest in the world. We can compete and beat anybody if we have a level playing field.
You know, in the line of the economy, I want to talk about jobs and what kinds of jobs would you like to see created in your district?
The thing that I want to see, we have a great manufacturing base in the district. The number one thing I want to see happen is manufacturing jobs because, you know, we do not want to become a service-orientated country. You've got to be producing products out. And one of the things that in the northern part of the district, in the Rockford area, for example, the Brookings Institute came out with a study showing that 1 in 8 jobs in the northern part of the district have a great deal to do with trade. So one of the things that we have to do is make sure that our manufacturers have that level playing field to be able to compete with companies that are outside of the United States because we do have a by far superior product. It's just getting the taxes under control. Another huge thing that would help our manufacturing base is that we have companies like Cat and Deere, who a lot of the companies in the northern part of the district do a lot of work for them. For example, Dial Machine, they do a lot of work with Cat. We have Ingersoll Rand that does a lot of work with Cat. What we've got to do is these companies, they have business offshore, and they want to bring this money back to the United States of America. The problem is what we do is we penalize them a 35% tax when they bring the money back. It's $1.4 trillion sitting offshore. If we were to reduce that down to 5%, allow them to bring that back and build and grow jobs in the U.S., it would create roughly 3 million jobs in a 2-year period. A big chunk of those jobs would come to our district. So I'm a big proponent of repatriation, allowing our American companies to bring that money back. If you look at other countries out there that do business in the United States, they allow their companies to pay the tax in the U.S., but then when they want to bring it back home, they don't charge them a tax, and that's where we got to learn how to compete. Given that opportunity, we can really grow and create more jobs here in the U.S.
And you touched on this, but I want to ask, what role should the federal government play in creating those jobs that you just talked about?
You know, the biggest thing the government can do is really to get out of the way. And what I mean by that is this. When you have the federal government coming in and telling the American farmer, which we have a lot of farmers in our district, that they can't allow their 17-year-old son or daughter to run that combine, my question to the government is, who's going to take better care of the kid, mom and dad or big government? So, getting out of the way. Now, look, and I want to be clear here is that we all understand that we need regulation because, you know, you're going to have bad players that you got to keep in check. But at the same time, when you've got them coming in over-regulating, a lot of the businesses that I talk to, whether it's work comp, the regulations that are there, the looming tax increases coming, these folks are all looking for certainty, and they can't get that when the government is coming in. They're constantly adding more regs and taxes to them.
Let's switch to labor management relations. I want to know your position on right-to-work laws.
Yeah, when it comes to right-to-work, you know, I believe that, each person, if you're in a union, or you're working for a company that is in a union, and they're going in and negotiating contracts for you, I think that you should have to pay, you know, for the representation. I believe that when it comes to the unions. Look, I've got 13 years of union background. Are they perfect? Well, maybe not. But are companies perfect? Of course not. But this is where I think my experience of having 13 years of union background, along with being a small business owner, I understand that you can have an even mesh to where it's fair for both the worker and the company to where both parties thrive.
But what then should be the relationship between governments and their employee unions?
One of the things that where there's a problem, and don't get me wrong, there's a lot of good unions out there, but the one thing is that we've got to take a look at is the pensions that are going on through the public sector unions. And I think one of the things that I want to be clear on is that, you know, promises made are promises kept. And what I mean by that is that if we've made a deal with folks that are there now, we maintain the deal made. But what we've got to do is we've got to get from the pensions, and we need to do this on in the Congress, in the Senate, across the board. But you have what we call defined benefit and defined contribution. Our country can no longer afford to have defined contribution or defined benefit for new people coming into the system. We've already made promises to people that are there. You keep that promise, but at the same time, allow for the new folks coming in to go into a defined contribution to where they own the money. They don't have to worry, you know, if they want to move or go around, they do not have to worry about whether or not these people are going to be solvent or not, because their money's in their own account.
Let's turn to domestic energy. What course should the United States take on domestic energy, in your opinion?
One of the things that we have to do, I'm a big believer in all of the above. Whatever we can do to relieve our dependency upon foreign oil, I'm all in. And one of the things that we've seen with this administration that's costing thousands of jobs across the country is the attacks on clean coal. And for example, that I would give you is Caterpillar in the district. They're looking at doing some layoffs of around 1,000 people. And this is specifically because of the coal industry constantly being attacked by this administration. And what folks have to realize is that, number one, is with the scrubbers that we have, the technology today with the modern technology for coal, we can scrub the coal and actually put out a very clean product. The one thing that's very frustrating, as it continues to be attacked, if, for example, Caterpillar does their layoffs, they're talking 1,000 people, that's going to adversely affect the downstream. Specifically, it would be Dial Machine. It would be Ingersoll Rand that has spinoff jobs that come from these. Dial just did a multi-million-dollar expansion, and now they're seeing a slowdown in the work because of the adverse effect of the attacks by the administration on clean coal. And that's the kind of stuff we've got to work on. I have a greenhouse myself, and I'm a big believer in green energy, but I always tell people is green is red, white, and blue. I build a greenhouse because, it saves me energy, and it leaves a very small footprint, but, allowing us to legally get into our natural gas, allow for oil to be pulled out of the ground in the public-owned land. Right now, it's really thriving in the private sector, because that's the only place that folks can gather it. Natural gas, oil, some wind energy, things like that, and not fully subsidized. The subsidies need to roll away, I believe. It's one thing to have the government come in and help out and to get things off the ground, but it's another thing to have them constantly, year in, year out, subsidize, the different pieces of energy.
What foreign policy issues, or what other foreign policy issues do you see as paramount for the U.S.?
I'm a big believer in walk softly, carry a big stick. Is that if somebody like Iran or someone somebody that just does not like the United States of America and wants to cause wreak havoc on our country, they need to know when they do come and mess with the United States of America that we're not going to sit back and tolerate it. We've got to have strong leadership. And when we say, if you do this, our word is our word, and know that there will be, some type of action if you come and attack the United States of America. At the same time, let me say, we are $16 trillion in debt. We cannot afford to be the police of the world. I'm all for pulling out of Afghanistan if we do it in a proper fashion where we do not put our soldiers at risk when they go to pull out. So I think timelines, you know, to set a specific day, I have a problem with that just because it tells the Al-Qaeda and other terrorist groups that, okay, this is the day when you guys can take over. Let the armies over there in Afghanistan stand up, complete our mission, and then we pull out.
How should the federal government, in your opinion, deal with abortion rights?
You know, here this is a pretty touchy situation. You know, for example, when the administration came out and basically came out and told us, hey, Catholic Church or subsidiaries of the Catholic Church, we're going to force you to provide abortion services, the pill and other things against the church teaching. I believe that's unconstitutional. One of the things that I truly believe is that, you know, 0.3% of abortions are because of rape and incest. You know, I think that at some point, you know, when you've got 99.7% of the unborn children being aborted out of abortion, you're only 0.3%. So I would like to see abortions eliminated. I'd like to see adoption really focused in on. One of the biggest things that I think we can do is when a person goes in to take a look at getting an abortion, that they get the full story and not just part of it. 90-some percent of the people that go to Planned Parenthoods have an abortion, and I believe it's specifically because they don't get to see the sonogram of that beating heart of that child in the womb. And I think that the main thing that we can do is make darn sure that people going in that are going to be put under like that have all of the information available to them before they make that big procedure. Another thing that's really, really important, and this is this separates myself from my opponent, is that I do not believe that partial birth abortions should be done. She's supported by Emily's List, which is the extreme abortion group. Even my pro-choice friends do not like the idea of partial birth abortion. Another problem is allowing for a teenage child to go over and have an abortion without parental consent. I believe that's wrong. I have four daughters myself, and if they're going to go and be put under to have that major surgery, myself and my wife as parents of that child should have a say in what's going on there.
What role should the federal government have regarding marriage?
You know, I think it's quite clear is that marriage is between a man and a woman. I don't believe that any church should be forced to marry a man and man, woman and woman. Now, if it's a church issue, it's not a federal issue whatsoever. You know, if two men or two women want to get married, then they've got to find a church that does that. But the government should not come in and dictate to the Catholic Church, the Lutheran Church, the Presbyterian Church, any church whatsoever as to who they can marry and who they can't.
You know, what do you believe sets you apart as the best choice for your district?
I think the big thing is that, you know, I'm a guy that comes directly out of the private sector, never, ever had any intention in running for a public office. But, you know, with the state of Illinois, with the Illinois 17th, with the country as a whole, looking at the direction we're going, we've got to get good people that are going to come in and lead by example. When I ran, I told the folks, I did a contract with the Illinois 17th District. I said, look, elect me. I'm going to reject the congressional pension. I'm going to take my own health care to Washington, D.C. I'm going to read and understand each and every bill that I go to vote on. Nobody had to come in and handpick me and try to pick, you know, push people out of the race. I'm doing this for the future of the country, my kids, my grandkids, and other folks, not for a wall plaque or because somebody, you know, were to tell me that, hey, it's your turn now. I believe that our country needs people that have business background, that understand that you've got to be proactive, not reactive, and are going to come to the table with solutions. I think another thing that you see very clear and crisp is that I work with people on the other side of the aisle. When you look at, there's companies out there that they'll rank you 1 to 100, 1 being far left, 100 being far right. I'm a 57, I'm a center-right guy. I'm constantly looking at building relationships with Democrats and Republicans in Congress, and I think that that's something that we truly need. This fighting that goes on where you don't get anything done has to come to a halt. Instead of being Democrat or Republican, we've got to be United States Congress members, and that way I think if we do that, we can get stuff done. Another thing that's really important is not being concerned with who gets credit for what. We've gotten a lot of things done by working across the aisle with Dave Loebsack, Democrat from Iowa, and we're not concerned about who gets the credit. We just want to get it done so we can get Americans back to work.
And finally, what other issues do you see as important to the district, the state, and the nation?
I think the number one thing that I hear constantly is it's about the jobs and the economy. And, you know, for example, you know, we've got these tax increases that are coming in January. And the president back in 2009 had even said, look, why would we want to put these tax increases into play when we're in such a fragile recovery? Nothing has changed from then until now. This is about the government getting in there and creating certainty, letting people know what cards are on the table. One of the things we did just this past year, since 2009, the United States had been on extension after extension after extension for transportation. It was this Congress that actually got a two-year transportation bill with the trade deals that we got put together since 2007. They've been trying to get these trade deals because we knew darn well they'd be good for our economy. This Congress actually got those done. So it's really trying to get people that are going to work together for the common good of all the folks in America in our districts.